You said you had something to start with today.
Yeah, listen, bud.
I know. Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing this.
No, it was good. Thought I'd surprise you with this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So, the debate of should you go to U.S. college or should you go to
CHL? Ooh, I like this debate.
CHL.
Yeah.
So, people on the onside go, like a lot of people say something like, well, if you got a scholarship, you go. Like, why would you give it up? Or why would you do anything else? Doesn't make any sense. So, here we go. I always love to promote the OHL, and I love to promote college as well. But I love the OHL because a lot of times they don't get the credit or the recognition for some of the things that they do. So I was talking to one of our goalies today when we were doing our junior skate. So I asked him today, I said, are you working much right now? So he goes, no, not really. He goes, because I'm doing some of the stuff for school. I said, oh, what are you doing? He goes, what do you call it?
good story.
Getting my pilot's license.
Pilot's license.
So I thought, yeah, he didn't say school first. I said, what are you pilots for fun? Or if he goes, no, I'm doing that through my education package. Cool.
Very cool.
So like a lot of times when like, that's what I like about the OHL. It's like you get your school package, but it doesn't have to be necessarily for
university
to be an engineer. Yeah. Or whatever, right? Or master's in this. It goes towards any education. So if you want to be a firefighter, you want to be a real estate agent, like all that stuff can go into your school package. So the cool thing is he would be an overage this year. So he started the process of the pilot thing while he's still playing. So he's already, so if you were going to university, he'd be in his first year of university while he's still playing. So that the team is paying, or the CHL pays for that, or the team pays for that. And that's not including what they pay after, right? So the team's responsible for your education. So for kids that have brains and goals and that want to play hockey at the same time, and if they're debating the CHL versus college, that opportunity is like huge, right? The part that I'm muttering here, but the part that I find interesting is he found a different vehicle to use rather than traditional, I'm going to get a sociology degree,
right.
and maybe nothing comes of that. So this kid puts his head together and he wants to be a pilot. So I asked him, like, what are you doing now? How many hours? So he's got, I think it's 1,600 or 1,800 hours that he's got to put in. So he's at the minimum right now. But he's getting there, and he's going to be a year ahead of the game and stuff like that. And I just thought it was freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So if he uses that, can he still go and play pro afterwards?
Well, so because he's still playing, so I'm going to get a little gray. Because he's still playing, the team is responsible for all your education.
So that isn't taking away
no,
from the,
that's not
the school
taking
package
away.
He has afterwards.
Right. So if you're a brain guy. Right?
Brain guy.
If you're a brain guy and you get out of high school, like say your late birthday, for example, and you're out of high school at 17 or whatever. So if you're playing 2-3 years in the OHL, the OHL is responsible for paying for your education for those times. And it doesn't go against your school package until you're done. So you can use 2-3 years to get ahead. Like maybe you get a year's university or two if you're really intelligent or really disciplined. Then there's a time... I know it's NHL, that's void. The education package is void, but there's a time period where they give you time to decide. So you can get X amount, try pro at whatever level it is. And then it might be 18 months, maybe.
I think it is that.
And then you can come back and it's in the CHL bank for paying for your education. So can't really lose.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. That is true too. Like people don't really... You don't realize the little details of it. Like you think school package, right away you're thinking university degree, whatever. And people a lot of times, they forget that there's also the education before the school package that they're also paying for. So you go to school, like when you're done, like so Charlie's going into his third year, he'll be out of high school. So now he has to go take some kind of class or whatever. They're paying for that the whole time. For the next 2, maybe 3 years.
Yeah, if he plays an overage, yeah.
3 years, right? So they pay for that. And then he still has his 4 years after that. So he might be halfway, in theory, if he was to take 3 classes a semester, then he could be done 2 years of school before he's out of the OHL even, right? Obviously kids don't do that, but that's just an, as an example, it's, they pay for all that stuff and you still get your four after that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So if he came from a parents that were scholars and we were adamant on him going to school, get your business degree or finance, economics or something like that, you can get a year or two ahead of the game and go into university and have it like completely played. And then maybe a master's on top of that. Right. But money goes into it. So anyways, it's very good. Someone might correct me on one of my sentences there, but that's,
you get the gist.
I hope so. But that's, I love it because it's something that's not really necessarily thought of a lot of the times. So when he told me a pilot, unbelievable. Yeah, Al Secord. Remember Al Secord?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I do.
Yeah, he was a pilot when he retired from the NHL.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Well, and the other side of it is the NHL, even if you play. You see, this is the other thing. We talk about if you play in the NHL, you're rich, right? People think you're rich. And I was talking to one of the guys that was drafted. We were talking about your first signing bonuses and stuff like that. And you didn't realize how much we're taking from taxes. I thought you just get the bonus. I said, well, you do get the bonus, but you're an adult now. So you got to pay taxes. Then after that, you've got to pay, if you play in the NHL, you can pay escrow. Your first 3 years, you're on an ELC, which is an entry-level contract. Your entry-level contract limits you to just under $1 million a year. So you can make some stuff on the side through maybe some, if you're a model or something like that. But no, endorsements, that's the word, modeling.
Yeah.
kind of a model. You can make money on that, but, whatever. So I said, this is why when you get there, you got to have some kind of a brain or someone that you already know that's going to help you manage your money, because you can go through, like, if you get a $95,000 signing bonus every year for your entry level, which you will get, you got to pay tax on that. So it's really like $50,000. So after $50,000, can you live on that? Yes. You can live on it, but you're not getting rich. Like if you're still in junior or whatever, right? So it's like, okay, you got a budget. So it's good to take that money, make sure that, maybe you not avoid taxes, but defer taxes in whatever investments and stuff like that. Like that's a small amount. It's still a good start, whatever, but defer taxes and you're not rich yet. So if you play in the NHL and so now you get to the NHL. This was talking about this other guy playing in the NHL and you're making, let's say, the 850 or 950, 975, just under $1 million. It sounds like, oh, you're a millionaire. No, you are, but you're not, because you've got to pay your percentage of income tax. So that income tax is close to, let's say, 40 to 50%. So, okay. So you make around 500. Well, no, because there's escrow. Well, what's escrow? Well, escrow is I have a hard time describing this, but it's like hockey revenue sharing and all those different things, so that your income goes down to, let's say I'm not 100% sure, it's like close to 20%. So now you're down to like 250, 200. That's a good take home pay. Then you got to pay for your training. You still have to pay for,
You're making good money, but you're not. You can't just blow everything all the time whenever you want. You're not a rich guy.
Right. So if you don't get your second contract after your ELC, and then if you only make 800 or 900 again, you're not rich. You're making a good living for a 24-year-old, a really good living for a 24-year-old. But having said that, you're making good money for a 24-year-old, but you're living the life
of a millionaire.
Yes, or somewhat like that, or someone that makes a good buck. Now, if you make a lot more money, good for you. But if you get your third contract, that's where you really start making money, right? Like, I'm no financial planner here, just to be clear, but just common sense, right?
But we've seen this with a lot of guys, right?
Well, this is it. So a lot of people think, well, they make $1 million. They do, but they don't. Right. There's other hidden things. Now, some of the escrow gets paid back to you, like you might get a check for 50 grand and you go, okay, that's a bonus. Anyways, my point is this guy getting he's got a plan. So if he doesn't play in the NHL, he's got something to fall back on. If he does play in the NHL, he's going to be maybe halfway there to getting his pilot's license. He's going to have a little bit of money in the bank and go do that. It's not going to kill him. And he's got a nice career. So I think it's great if you play your cards right. If you go in there dumb, you can come out. That's why a lot of guys can go out and play, and then they come out and it's like, I need to work, because most guys need to work. So you see a guy like Al Secord, you go, okay, cool, man. You had a good career after that.
Yeah. Well, I think people don't realize that you're not actually rich part. I know we talked about this like a long time ago, one of the episodes we did a while ago. And I remember people saying like, no, you actually make this much and this much. It's like, okay, not the point. Like we're giving you an example of like, you lose, you're not 950 is not 950. Right. And for some reason, when you're a hockey player now, it's like, that doesn't apply to you anymore, but it actually does. And we've seen that with so many guys that are, they play minor pro, or they had their entry level deal and that was it. And then they live the life. Like that's what they're acting like they're there. And now I can live the lifestyle. And you can for a couple of years and then it's gone now, you know? So if you actually want to be able to use it as a springboard at the very least, if you're not going to be a consistent NHL player, that's a great thing to start with, to springboard yourself into something else afterwards. But if you're just so busy being a beauty that you forget to do some planning with it, then that's stupid on your part, right? Yeah. Which is the point of what we're saying. Yeah. So,
and like as you said, someone was going to type in the comments that, oh yeah, poor guys, they only make 950 and have to pay taxes on it. The point is they make that money for a small period of time. So if you're not smart with it, you'll be just like everyone else. Or if you are intelligent and have other plans and are interested in other things, that's a great springboard for life. And then if you play in the NHL for 10 or 15 years, well, God bless you and the horse you rode in on. Awesome. You should have a good life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's another perspective too, right? Because the average, what's the average life of a player in the NHL? Maybe 6-7 years?
Average is four.
Four. Okay. So let's say, and if you're making the base, which most people are making the base, right? So even if when it's all said and done, you're making $400,000 a year, $400,000 for 4 years. It's like most people that are like seasoned in seniority in their roles at their job are making somewhere between 100 and 150 when it's all said and done, if you're in an upper role somewhere. So you make that for 30 something years or more, they're making 400 for 4 years. So it's like, it sounds like a lot of money in the short term, and it is in the short term. But when you stretch that out, it's like, that's not really enough. When your career, it's like, yeah, okay, he makes 400. I only make 90. I only make 70. I only make whatever. But you're making it for 30, 40, 50 years, however long you work in your career, or more than that. And then they're 4 years and out, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not actually that much money.
If your best friend is the top five players on the team that make $5, $6, $7, $11 million a year, and that's who you're hanging with.
Yeah.
It's a different lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Can't spend the way they do.
Yeah.
Right.
So
anyways, that's my little rant for today.
Yeah. Interesting story. Good points. I like talking about that. I want to revisit that topic later, maybe in more depth. That's kind of an interesting conversation. Yeah, I do. The money talk, the money side. Okay. So today we're going to talk about continuing our coaching series. We're going to talk about coaching in practices versus coaching in games. So I kind of have this broken up into two sections. The first will be about practices, obviously. The second will be about games. And a lot of the practice stuff we've talked about in terms of like skills coaching, systems coaching, we've touched a lot of these points before, so we don't necessarily need to spend too much time on that part. And then I kind of want to get more to coaching in the game, because that's not really something we've covered as much. So I think that'll be a little bit more interesting for people to hear. What I'm hoping is, because these topics can be so in depth, I'm hoping that us like touching on some of these things gets people to ask questions about it, which is why for the members on the website, we're going to have that for the Q&A episode again that we do at the end, because all of these, every single little sub point we have here, we could talk about as a full episode more or less. So if something here sparks a question, that's the whole point of doing these series, is like so that you guys can ask us questions and write something in that we can elaborate on further. So, because everyone has different circumstances and different things that they want addressed. So that's kind of what, at least for me, when we frame up these episodes, that's kind of what I'm hoping, is it gets people to ask some questions. So if you're a member and you have, you'll have access to that when you log in, there's a button there where you can write in a question for these episodes. And I'll send that out also in one of our little member emails that I send out for you guys to ask questions also. So, keep that in mind, because we got another episode after this one, and then we'll get into our Q&A stuff. So send those in if you can. So practice stuff. So I think to start, maybe you can just give us like a little bit of an overview as a head coach or someone who's running the team or running a practice, whatever, what kind of your philosophies were about practicing. So everything from like how you divide up teaching time versus drill time, how you set up the team structure, doing system stuff versus skill stuff, and just kind of your thoughts around coaching a practice in general before we get more specific.
Yeah. All right. You got to, first of all, kind of look at how much time you have every week to practice. So if it's two practices a week, you kind of try to be as efficient as you can. Practices to me, are your, obviously your teaching, right? So that's what, and there needs to be a purpose in your practices. If you go out and just run the same drill all the time, that I shouldn't say that's not the best idea, because sometimes it is. Like, for example, if you have a young team that, you know, they need to be, they can't pass the puck well. I did this with one of my young teams before. They were just horrible at passing the puck. We spent a ton of time with passing drills, not drills, but like game-like drills, so that the puck would move nice and quick, and you know, they had good habits. So yes, there was a lot of repetitiveness in some of the drills, but that was for a purpose, because they weren't very good at it. So it was about doing number of reps, so that it was like they didn't have to think about it so much. But anyways, how would you set up the structure versus drills and all that stuff? So I think it's important, earlier, like if I was to have a choice earlier in the week, I would do a lot more. I always want to make sure that when I say skills, is that people don't think it's pylons and peps, yeah. Right? What I could mean by that, it could be a lot of passing. It could be a lot of whatever game situation that involves skill. So it could be passing, could be skating with passing, and all that stuff. That's where I would spend most of my time, getting ready for. Just so they're skating, touching pucks, making good plays. And then I may or may not touch on a system thing. Well, no, I will touch on a system thing. Like, we're going to do something, like it's going to be either one end of the ice. Like, maybe it's breakouts and defensive zone. So that we could take a piece of time that to do that. Then the next practice is going to be a little bit more structured to get us ready for a game. So this is how we play. And then it might be a forecheck and a penalty kill or a power play and a whatever. So anyways, go ahead.
Okay. So I think, because we've talked, like I said, we've talked about some of this stuff before. So I want to maybe ask this question, because I think this is a good one. Obviously in practice, you want to be teaching. But how do you balance, or how do you draw the balance between like time at the board where you're explaining the why, assuming you're being a good coach and you want to explain the why behind what you're doing? How do you balance time at the whiteboard versus time actually running the routes, doing the drill? Or do you kind of try to integrate it in one in the same? Like, for example, you go to the whiteboard, explain the drill, we run the drill, but you stop the drill to teach, versus we spend 10 minutes at the board and then just run the drill and I leave them alone. Like, what are your thoughts on balancing that kind of time thing?
Yep. So a lot of people have a theory that you don't want to waste good ice time. And I would agree with that. So one way that you can help with that is, this is what my rule was, is be ready 10 minutes before practice. Most practices, I would say most or every practice, there'd be very few that I didn't do this, where I would just go over what we're going to do. All right. So there's one. So they get to see it. And I already know that some guys are going to forget the first drill, but they've seen it. And hopefully with that, you get 10 out of 20. I was going to say 50% or more that, yeah, okay, I know what I'm doing, so that we can get her going. Okay. So that's number one. I'm not a big proponent of like wasting time on the ice is like, if you're sitting there on the board for 25 minutes or 5 minutes at a time and you never get anything done, that's to me a waste of time. But I think it's important that people do things right. So going over drills and the purpose and stuff like that, I think that's worthwhile. So if it's a couple minutes, that's fine. And I would actually rather have people or my team understand what I'm doing instead of stopping it and snapping on them. Do you know what I mean? So I'd rather take a minute or two or 30 seconds or whatever to go over the drill, say, everybody understand, you got it, you understand the purpose of this. And if they do, then we're in good shape. What was my train of thought there? So my next theory on skill, whether skill building or team drills and stuff like that, is, do you understand or whatever? So it's show. So if, let's say, it's a skill drill, I can show. Now you do, and then let them fail or succeed. So if they fail, it's good to fail once or twice so that you can point things out, right? If they succeed, great, and then you can point out the good and the bad. So I think it's important that once a drill or a skill drill or whatever it is going on, it's important to be, let's just do a simple neutral zone D to D up. Right. So let's say the D are, they're executing the drill properly. Like, let's say all five guys are executing the drill properly, but let's say the D are not moving their feet at all.
The details.
So
yeah.
it's just without going to the board and stopping the whole practice, is D, move your feet. D, move your feet. D, like the coaching cues that get them to maybe get them going. So D, move your feet. Keep your head up. Centerman, swing low, swing wide, swing deep, so that we are a pass option. And if they continue to not to do it, or you see a couple passes that weren't in the right area, or they're off, or they weren't strong, hard passes or accurate, then there's a reason for it. So it could be, okay, hold down. D, everybody, remember what I said to you. If moving your feet, good things happen. Not moving your feet, bad things happen. So look at the last couple of practice or passes. D weren't moving their feet. Look what happens. The passes don't get there, or you're not, you know, when you're moving the puck, you're not in a position to defend or to jump in the rush, blah, 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 blah. So you can do that actively. And then there's times where you have to stop because it's just done wrong. Right. But so some of the teaching can be done in time. Right. One more thing about that, though, is, again, goes down to your audience. Because I just had, in the last couple of weeks, I had a younger group, older group, older group. So it's been progressing. And then in my mornings, before I start my day, I have a younger group, older group. And the younger group has an attention span of about like a gnat, right? They don't have it. So it's like, it's actively teaching. And then that's why having good help on the ice with, so that things can still roll. And I could pull you aside, Eric, and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. Fix this, so that it's constant and they can learn in time. So younger guys, you're going to get a little more frustrated with, you typically. Older guys have a little bit of attention span and you can relate to a little bit better. Anyways. So maybe some guys can't relate to an older kid, but they can relate better to younger kids, but that would be my philosophy.
Yeah. I think in terms of keeping the flow going, I think it comes down to the level of preparation as a coach, right? Like, you need to know why you're doing the drills or doing the purpose for the drill, because it shouldn't take you long to explain it. Like, these aren't things that need to take 10 minutes to explain, right?
Well, that's why I like to keep things at every level. So start off with basic, right? And then you could always add a pass, add a back check, add a forecheck, add pressure, whatever, all those things. But if you start basic and have one teaching point and another teaching point or another layer of executing something, then that's how you can kind of just make it better.
Yeah. So, if we talk, just touching on again quickly, if we talk a little bit about some like system stuff. So obviously you want to teach like your three zones. So D zone, neutral zone, offensive zone. So that would be your breakouts, your D zone coverage, and then neutral zone regroups, neutral zone forecheck, offensive zone forecheck, and some kind of system in that. Special teams, power play, PK. Then you start to get into things that maybe are a little bit more high level, which would be like face-off plays or even like last minute plays, these types of things. So how did you go about like teaching and working on those things? And obviously it's different depending on the level, but for me, I'm just thinking back to when I played, and a lot of that stuff we like not on the ice. Like, a lot of times it'd be like, okay, like this is our forecheck, and then maybe we would run it in a practice, but maybe we wouldn't. Or you do it in a few practices and now you just know that these are our forechecks, and he could just call it before the game. Like, the coach would just call it before the game. Obviously that's a little bit more high level, but how, or even face-off plays, that's another good one. It's like running those kinds of things. So what are your thoughts on spending time on those? Or if you're not going to do it on the ice, this is kind of where you get into some weird territory about how much time are we going to spend on these things and like where it's appropriate, because are you going to have an hour meeting before practice to go over these things? And like, when is that appropriate? So kind of, what are your thoughts on some of that system level stuff that maybe you can't fit into your practice time?
Yeah. Well, I think it's, that's a really good question. I think age appropriate is important. Obviously if you're playing OHL, junior, college, pro, there's meetings and all that stuff, and the understanding of the game is a lot better. But having said that, I think it's still important that you do stuff on the ice, because skating is skating. How you move a puck, how you position yourself.
The
higher you go, there's more little details to it. But let's go back to like a young 9-year-old team. Video is probably not going to do it. Like, some kids it might stick a little bit. If you go in a school gym or in a parking lot or, you know, whatever, and you mark out like this will be the corner, this would be a forecheck, this would be our D zone. You could do it in your shoes or whatever, fake hockey sticks or whatever. You can do it, but it's still not ice. I think, and the other thing is, if you think avoiding that is just a waste of time because it's not a high tempo practice, I think you're wrong. Because you can even see it in the NHL in junior. You'll do, like, for example, let's say D zone coverage. So I'm going to just show a piece of paper here just for, this is a hockey rink. Okay. So this is your offensive zone. So let's say we dump a puck in and we just do a forecheck. So I might have a co-chair and a co-chair. We'll throw a puck in that corner and this guy. So how do we forecheck? So if it's a 2-1-2 with a high guy, so first guy, second guy, have the third guy up high here. Let's throw the puck over here. What happens? This guy goes, this guy goes, this guy goes. It's nothing sexy, but it shows them. Right? Okay, blow the whistle and we do the same thing down here. Now it's your D zone. Throw the puck here. D, center, get in all your positions and run through that a few times. For example, I think it's actually beneficial. You'll do that on the penalty kill. You do that in power plays. I think it's actually very beneficial because now you know exactly where you're on the ice. Right? So like if you do that on video or in the gym, let's say like that, you use a gym, well, there's no circles. There's like, so you got to kind of pretend.
Feel.
You can be a little bit more particular. So that's not really rocket science, but for the kids it's like, okay, I get it, and now you can teach. It's a teaching point. So does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So the other thing is like, so a lot of people get hung up on like even skills things, right? It's like, oh man, that was really good. Like someone will say, oh, that was a really good skate. When people say that to me sometimes, I go, that was just one because for whatever reason, I just had to get the kids going and I just worked them hard. It wasn't actually as good as you think it was. Actually, one that was a lot slower with more teaching or there's more details, that was actually better. Not necessarily all the time. So people a lot of times confuse a really good hard practice where you sweat to actually learning something and being able to execute. Because at the end of the day, even though you might be coaching a lower level team or a younger team, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't learn how to play hockey a little bit, right? I'm not talking like anything crazy, but the little details so that they can progress.
Yeah, and that gets to the like hockey IQ discussion and using coaching cues, because that's where you actually learn how to think the game properly. And I was even doing it today with guys doing our workouts. We had a hill workout today, and I was talking to them about doing knee drive stuff. And because for a lot of those kids, maybe they do, maybe they don't, you don't realize that the second half of your stride is the knee drive part. Like bringing your foot back is the second half.
That's and your speed.
Yeah, right? That's the speed. Yeah. So when we're running on the hill, it's reminding them the purpose, like why we're doing this and how this translates. And then the practice setting, it's the same thing. If you're doing system stuff, that's why you need to have an understanding of why you're doing what you're doing. And you hit them with those coaching cues and you can do it while they're moving. Like maybe at higher levels, you start to get into some like continuous forecheck drills. Like one of the, I remember a warm-up drill we did at the U would be our forechecks. So it'd be like you would forecheck and they would break the puck out against our forecheck. Then they dump it in, the next guys go, and it's like a flow of forechecks. And we do that for the first like 5 minutes as a warm-up drill. And you can start to run those things as guys understand the game more and they don't get confused about who's going and this kind of stuff. But even at that level, the details can slip. So as the coach like saying those little things, like for the D, feet moving, like quick touches, like don't dust the puck off, guy like hard down the wall or whatever your cues are that you want to use. These are things that just remind the guys in live action their points, right? Because it's easy to forget and not pay attention to those things. So maybe going a little bit to the skill stuff before we move on to the games. We talked about the stick handling, shooting, passing. We've talked about all that stuff a lot. But I think it's, especially for younger, more inexperienced coaches or guys that haven't played, this goes for systems too, for that matter. What if you don't know skill stuff or system stuff very well? So like what advice would you give to newer coaches or even like coaches that are like AAA small center coaches that maybe aren't that experienced or they don't know exactly what systems they should use or how to coach certain teams? Like what advice would you give to those types of coaches or even moms and dads watching that are trying to be helpful? Like how do you teach in those situations when maybe you don't have as much knowledge, where like maybe you can't demo the skill drill or you can't show the system very well because you actually never did it or you don't know it or whatever?
Yep. Well, I'm going to say, from a skill standpoint, I'm definitely not the skater I was 5 years ago, and my hands are okay. Like, they're pretty good still. So I could use that as an excuse as I shouldn't be a skills coach anymore. Like, I'm not as fast as I was, right? So I could use that as an excuse, but I have a brain still. So I can show the, I can still do it, but I can show the basics. So because dad on the ice is helping out with a seven-year-old group, and let's just say a simple thing, because the younger you are, it doesn't have to be elaborate skills. It's hanging onto the puck, it's skating, it's turning, it's making passes and stuff like that. So if they can show, you know, even if they're knee knocked and they can hardly skate, you know, there's three cones, let's say, and we're going to turn this way, we're going to turn this way, we're going to turn this way. You don't have to be Sidney Crosby to be able to teach that, right? The concept is there, and then you could, you know, then you could say, let's move your feet, you know, stuff like that. So that's number one. You don't have to be the best skills coach. Where do you get the information? That would be another thing. Or how do you apply it? Like I said, the younger you are, the less important it is on how perfect it is. It's just getting out there. And then small area games is another great way of just getting your skill, right? What was my point to that?
You're saying where to get the information.
Yeah, where do you get the information? So obviously, like, to me, it's like, go to someone that knows. I mean, I think the one thing that in life is that people are always happy to show what they know, right? If you ask someone, hey, can I pick your brain about something? It's like, oh, it's an automatic compliment. So, and again, it doesn't have to be the highest coach at the highest level. It could just be someone maybe a year up or someone that's been coaching that level for 7 years or 10 years that likes to do that kind of stuff and just share their experience with you, right? So you can get some drills and some philosophies from those people. And that's where I would go with that. And I would do the exact same thing with systems, is just go to someone that you know. Or, I mean, there's freaking YouTube and stuff like that now too, right? So you can get some idea and some, go with the basic stuff and then add to it. But then once you get some basic stuff and you want to have more, go to the next guy up or a couple levels up, or someone that you know, a guy that you know that knows a guy, and just ask, you can pick a brain. And to me, that's great. And you're sharing. That's what hockey is, right? You're sharing things all the time.
Yeah, it's funny because we talk about this like it's so easy to do that, and it should be. But people are really uneasy about like showing vulnerability. Like they don't know. And especially in coaching roles, because coaches are just people. And, you know, we were talking with that group the other day about like talking with scouts and teams and stuff. And you forget that the adult you're talking to is just a person also. Like, you're just so intimidated talking to the older person that you forget the human part of it. And I think that human part of it for coaches is sometimes it's hard to swallow the fact that you actually just don't know, or owning the fact that you don't know and should go look for help, and being scared about, nervous, scared, or just not having the humility to ask for help when you need it. Because most of the time, if you ask someone for help, like, people want to help, like, to your point. Like, people want to tell you what they think they know. And if you can peel one thing off of that person that's helpful for you, then that's a great thing to be able to do. But that step of owning the fact that you're unsure, or you need clarification, or you don't know what you should know or what you think you should know, that's the hard part from a coaching perspective.
It's funny because as you're saying that, I do this all the time. Like, I'm not a financial guru by any means, but when I talk to someone that does well, and like, for example, I'm not going to use a name, but 2 weekends ago, I was with someone that's in the financial business. Son plays hockey and signed. Okay. So I was asking him, I said, I'm not being nosy. I said, but if my son was in your son's situation, what would you do? What did you do with your kid? So he said, oh, I did this, this, and this, and this. So I could go there. It's the same thing, right? I could go there and say, I'm going to make sure he invests and talk like I know what I'm talking about. Or could I go talk to the guy and learn something, right? And that's what I did. So, and I do that with people that are in business, because I own a business doesn't make me a businessman. It's actually the farthest thing from what I am, right? If I could do this without saying I own a business, I'd be the perfect guy. Not the perfect guy, but you know, I'd be in the perfect world. But it's, the fact is, I own a business. So I didn't grow up with that, even as a kid growing up, like, you know, how do I make 10 bucks into 100? How do I make 100 into a million? That's not my head. So when I talk to a businessman, I love, where did you start? Like, how did you do, like, how did you take a company that started off, you know, with five people and you have 300 or 3,000 or whatever people working for you, you have this, like, how did you do it? Like, how does your mind get there? Just to learn. It's like, you can sit there and say like, oh, I'm stupid, I'm not going to ask that. Or you can actually learn something. And to me, they love to share it. They do. They love to tell their story. Who doesn't want to tell their story if they're successful, especially, right?
Yeah. So it's such a human thing. That's why it's an important thing to highlight in what you're saying, because it's, when you're talking about going to find resources, it's like, we say it's so easy, like, just go ask. Well, just go find someone. It should be that easy. But
so my father-in-law, he's passed away, but he was a truck driver. I got a brother-in-law that's a truck driver. I cannot parallel park.
Yeah.
we went to the beer store once with my brother-in-law that drives a truck. He was just mentioning this the other day. We went to the beer store and parked. I just got a new truck. It was a bigger one than I usually had. He goes, what are you doing? I said, what? He goes, you got about 10 feet. I go, so we get out of the car. I got out and I said, you could have parked another truck in front of me. Yeah. I didn't know. So yeah. I asked him, could we go parallel parking? Like, come on, man. Yeah, you're 45, 50 years old. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the principle of it. I just like, I'll go around the block 10 times to find out the parking spot. Like, come on. That's not too bright. But
No, it's a good, it's actually funny. But
like,
though,
I'm a better truck driver than you?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. You drive a freaking truck.
Yeah, exactly. That's very
like
funny.
Like a big rig.
Yeah. That's hilarious. So let's move to some of the in-game stuff now, because I think this will be a little bit more interesting or not interesting, but getting away from some of the stuff we normally talk about. So, first, let's talk about pregame. So, going into your game now, what did you do with, like, what we'll include, like, pregame warm up stuff in there too. But, like, let's say like pregame rules, even like time to be at the rink, etc. What you did, pregame warm up stuff, and then like the pregame meeting. Like, how did you think about those things, and how did you structure that?
Okay, because I'm tired, I'm probably going to ask you what you said again. Yeah. But okay, rules for getting there. Yeah. Pre-game. It was the same as my practices. I didn't need you to be there 7 hours early. Okay? What I needed you to be is, I think it was like 15 minutes, be ready to play, like be ready in the room for me to come in and talk to you. That's all I cared about. Because I was never a big fan of... I shouldn't say this totally. I wasn't a big fan. I'm not a big fan of just doing a bullshit warm up. Just say we did a warm up. But I like the fact of doing it to get together and kind of, we're a team now. Let's get going. So we'd like do a 5 minute stretch before, 15 minutes before a game. Then it would be like 10 minutes before the game. I'll go over the details. So if you had to, like, hey, especially with kids. Shit happens. Your parents could be late for work. Your grandmother might have forgot, you know, whatever. So I didn't want to ever put pressure like that on parents. Is that right or wrong? I don't know. That's the way I felt about it. So that was for games.
Just to solidify, how long before a game did you want them there?
Be ready 15 minutes before.
That was all you
said? Yeah, like, it was just stretch.
It
was 20. Yeah. 20. So we got to stretch. But here, this actually might make more sense too, though. I'm not a fan of the kids going to the rink because I said so an hour before, so that they do nothing for an hour or 40 minutes or 30 minutes, right? So if you wanted to get there an hour or an hour and a half before, God bless you. The dressing rooms aren't even ready till about 30 minutes, right? Usually in these busy dressing rooms. So like, why? So if you want to, that's fine. Then when you get there, I felt like if you can just take that attention span and just shrink it, I think you get more juice out of the lemon. So it's like, okay, you don't have a whole lot of time to piss around. So maybe you got to get in your warm-up stuff. Maybe it's your bottom half, whatever. 20 minutes in, we're going to do a stretch. 10 minutes, you got time to get dressed. Or 5 minutes, you got a minute to get dressed.
I know. It's funny because I remember like AAA is hour before always.
Like, yeah, but why? You can't do anything.
I know. That's what I mean. It was like, why? Like, why does it have to be an hour before?
Well, so that's the parents. So that just makes the parents go out and drink.
Yeah.
So they watch the game and they get more mad at you.
Yeah, seriously. More upset. My dad has to miss another hour of work now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's what I think of.
But for me, from the kids' standpoint, that's what it was. Mostly your allergies, eh?
Bad, bad.
It was to shrink the time and to get them dialed in. So then it was like we did our little stretch and then we went over what I would want to do. So what I would do is I'd kind of marry what we did in practice or a theme like I do in practices and put that into the game and go over it, what I wanted to see. So one of the one point that I want to go back to with practices and games, even though it's a game, you should still have a plan, in my opinion. Even with when you're young, OHL coaches already know this. So if you come to the rink and there's days where, you know, maybe you went to the rink and you didn't have time to plan anything, you might have to pull out an old practice plan or something. But if you don't have a plan set, it's a tougher day. Sometimes you'll get away with that was a great practice because you can just wing things properly. But honestly, I'd rather go to the rink with a theme and 5-6 drills or 5-6 things that I want to work on and maybe only get to 2 or 3. But have it planned out and maybe change it as I go, because at least I know, okay, this is what I'm going to do, rather than going there, okay, now what should we do? You know what I mean? And fumble screw. And then it's the same thing with a game. It's like, what do we want to accomplish today? So let's say our team has been playing or whatever, right? We'll say this is something that we would need to work on. We worked on in practice. Say this is the forecheck. I really want to see the forecheck, the third guy high, blah, 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 and then our backcheck this. So this work on these three things. Go over a couple details, boom, not the whole game, just a few things, because you touch on different things every game. That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I like that too, because like it's another one of those things. It's like people just follow convention, and like sometimes you don't, like who started the be an hour before the game kind of thing? It's at youth levels. Like in junior, it's different because guys have like this whole elaborate 2-hour pregame, and then you have like meetings about stuff and all this, especially younger levels. Like I remember going to the rink and be like, I get there an hour before, it's like for the first 25 minutes we just can't go in the room. So they're just sitting there watching the guys on the ice before us. Like, why are we here? I don't know why I'm here, you know. So that's one. Okay, so if we start go in game now, so now you're on the bench, so talk a little bit about maybe coaching cues that you're using during the game or how you're thinking about that. Coaching staff, how you use your staff effectively versus not, should you use them, should you not, how to use them, and then individual coaching on the bench too. So I can remind you the other ones, but start with like coaching cues and how, like your coaching style during the game, what you're thinking of from behind the bench now.
Yep. 1 second. I had to put an exclamation mark there.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay, so coaching cues during the game. That's why you have a plan. That's why before the game, if I focus on, let's say it's forecheck and whatever, forecheck and neutral, whatever, forecheck. That's the one thing. Forecheck and just the hard work, sticks on pucks. Let's say those three things. That's my coaching cues all game. The other stuff we've talked about, right? But all game, that's what I'm harping on. It's like, remember, like in a game, if a guy's getting too low and I want a third guy high, so it's a 2-1-2, let's say. It's like, guys, you got to be lower than that. Third guy's got to be lower. Oh, look at how hard he went on that puck. Just those little things are what I'm reiterating, right? And it's basically that simple. Yeah. Honestly, that simple. I don't want to give them too much all the time. So other coaching cues would be the good stuff, right? You point out when someone blocked a shot, got the puck out. Those are things that are reminders. And then if someone turns one over at the blue line, it's not a freak show. It's like, yeah, that's what happens when we don't move our feet, guys. This is the problem. Like, we got to get that puck deep or whatever. So you don't make it like the end of the world, but you teach them, right? You're just letting them know this is what happens. Remember, we went over that in practice. Remember when we talked about this. Don't give up the puck at the blue lines or whatever, right? Using your staff.
But wait, before we'll do that one last, because that one's a little different. Let's go to individual coaching from there. So you just pointed out like somebody does something good versus someone does something bad. So how do you address those two things on an individual level in game? So kid has a pizza up the middle, like just like a bad mistake that was like, sometimes guys just have a stinker. Like it is what it is. It wasn't like a malicious mistake, or they do something that's a really timely error or whatever. Like how are you dealing with that in game? So what that could be, whatever, talking to the kid versus not, pointing it out versus not. Not saying anything, saying something, and then good or bad, whether it's it could be a goal or whatever.
Yeah. So let's start with bad. So if someone does like you said, no look, throw a pizza up the middle into the back of the net. First thing I do, I throw my clipboard, I rip my shirt off, and I when he comes to the bench, I give him the furry eyeball and I yell at him.
Yeah. So all the sticks on the ice, water bottles.
Yeah. Stuff happens, man.
Yeah.
So it's when it happens over and over, that's when you have to be stern. So the thing is when you make a mistake, you know, for the most part, you know, at every level, right? So a simple thing like, and sometimes depending on the kid, depending how many times these things happen, if it happens continuously, you have to be a little bit more stern and say, dude, like, you know what you did. Yes, but you've done it 8 times this game or 3 times the last couple games. Like, we have to figure this out. So you're a little bit more stern. But everybody knows when they made a mistake for the most part. So you might even put your arm around them and say, you know what you did, right? Or you got to be careful with that. Or that's got to go up the wall, right? Or whatever. And they go, I know, coach. Just, hey, let's go get it back. Like, put a positive spin on it, especially when they're young. Go get it back. It's not the end of the world, right?
So you err on the side of addressing it versus leaving it alone? Or it depends?
We're talking, like, big mistakes. But, like, okay, so this is another thing is this is where it's good to have good assistant coaches or assistant coaches that you include. I'm reading for the second time Mark Messier's book, and it's called No One Wins Alone. There's the answer. So if you're a good head coach, you have assistants that can run the bench while you do some teaching, right? So in youth hockey, especially, if you have experience in hockey, it's really important that you can actually teach them something, right? So for me, when I was coaching, I had a couple guys that were on the bench that really didn't know anything about hockey. So I said, okay, take care of this, take care of this. Like, these are the things you're looking for or praising or whatever. And these are I'll take care of everything else. So if I see something that was a mistake, it could be a small one, depending on the kid as well, right? So it's like, let's just say when Charlie was a guy, he could score from center ice kind of fairly often, or right?
I remember.
So let's say he was on a 2-on-1 and he decided to rip one and it went over the goalie's shoulder and score. Is that good? It's not really good. So I might take Charlie, for example, and say, okay, dude, what a shot, but it was a 2-on-1. Like, that's not the most intelligent play. Like, you got to use your teammates, right? Whereas it might be some other kid, and I might say the same thing, or I might even praise him for the goal, but it's like, it's a different teaching point.
It depends on
the right. So, yeah. Right. So, forget your question now.
No, what we were talking about, just individualizing, if a good thing happens versus a bad thing happens, you kind of touched a little bit about,
Sorry. So then another thing with the bad thing is, like, some kids are not confident, or they make a mistake. You've seen this, right? They make a mistake and they're almost in tears, or they are in tears because they know they made a mistake. And it's like, you can't
make
rip
it worse.
The guy. Yeah. You can't rip the kid, right? You just got to put your arm around him again and say, hey, dude, it's okay. Get it back. And it's important. That's a mental toughness thing too. It's putting your mind into the right frame of mind, right? It's living in the moment. It's like, it's okay. Get it back. And that gets you to think that you're going to be okay, right?
Yeah.
So
touch a little bit about on coaching staff. Any other?
Yeah, no, one more thing. Yeah. And the thing with the good is I love to point out the good. Love to point out the good when people do good things. You know, that was a great pass. That was a great block shot. Because especially as they're younger, good feedback's better than no feedback. Since some kids don't hear good things, right? As you get older, getting the puck a clean exit out of your zone is not worth your coach coming up to you and saying, man, did you do a great job getting the puck out? No, that's your job. That's your job. That's why you're getting your school paid for, right? You better do that. If you don't do that, then you're going to get reamed or you're going to get talked to.
Yeah, that's important too. There's like there's always like an underlying theme of age appropriate for all this stuff.
Yeah.
Anything else about like using the coaching staff? You kind of touched on it a little bit there.
I love you. Okay, so just going back to our the camps here. If I don't have enough, like, I'm not even saying that high quality, but we have good instructors, but which makes it better. But even if I didn't, I could, if I need people to maybe blow the whistle for me. I know that sounds like, why, you can't blow a whistle? No. I need someone to keep things in order. Like, I'll set the order, you keep it in order, and you know, make sure things don't go out of hand so that I have the ability to take 30 seconds to go to you and teach you.
And the drills keep going.
Right. Yeah. And I can do that to every kid pretty much whenever I need to. So it's the same thing on a bench and practices and all that stuff. I think one of the worst things that you can do as a head coach is have assistants that are just there to open doors or to get you your water, fill the water bottles and stuff. I think it's important that you teach your coaches a little bit, like at least a little bit. And if the more they're engaged, even better, right? But I think it's actually really important that you give them some responsibility. Okay, otherwise, why are you there? So that's why I always spent time with like Matt, that coached with me. He coached the forwards. He coached the D because my son was a D. So I would give him, these are the things you're going to look at. And, you know, so he would have specific things that he can look at. And he felt good about it. Like he enjoyed coaching at that point because he said, oh, okay, I didn't know this stuff, right? And then I had my forward coach do the forwards, and I did both. Like, not both. How do I say this? I oversee everything. Yeah. Right?
Right.
So that's, I just think it's really, really important that the coaches feel important, because why have
it's like with the players too, right? You got to feel important. If you don't feel like you're useful, then you're not going to really want to
do
the job.
It's even like a team manager, right? If you just say, I'm the coach, like I'm the coach in youth hockey anyways, I'm the coach and the manager just books hotel rooms. Well, it's actually better if you make them feel like they're actually part of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
So what do you think about even just like a personality style behind the bench? So on the extremes, you have the like super hyper emotional, rip their shirt off, yell and scream coach versus the like stoic, never shows emotion, never says much kind of coach. In your experience, what have you found to be kind of more effective than not? Or can all of them be effective depending on how you do it? And like, kind of, what do you think? Cause there's so many different types of people that are going to be behind the bench. It's like, what have you seen as like more versus less effective, et cetera?
Well, if I was to say what's more effective than less effective, I would say more effective would be the guy that's less animated and talks less.
Like the more even keeled.
More even keeled for sure. But I how I mean this is like just in anything, the more people say, the less people hear. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So if you're always freaking out on a ref or a mistake or this, that, and the other thing, it's always a freak show. The kids get used to just being a freak show, and your words don't mean anything anymore. Whereas if you're more of a quieter guy, especially if you can teach and you get your point across and let them play, and you know, you do your little teaching here and there in a fairly calm manner. You have to elevate your voice and stuff like that, I think, especially when you're younger, or be animated a little bit so they get it.
You want to have some energy.
Yeah. You don't want to be a neutered cat, right? So they don't get used to hearing that voice. And then when you do get a little bit animated because you are maybe pissed a little bit, then it's like, oh, okay, this is not good. We better tighten up. Where if you're always animated or always freaking out, then kids just think you freak out all the time, so it doesn't matter. So it's like your dad, right? Giving you shit all the time for every little thing, and he freaks out. Oh, I'm going to snap. It's like, well, you never snap, so I'm not worried about it. But it's the quiet dad that goes, when he loses it, you go, oh boy, okay, we're in shit now. We're in one now. So
you have a good saying about this stuff. We've said it before, how you're coaching the guys on the bench, not the guys on the ice during the game. So explain the saying. And then you can elaborate on kind of what you mean by that.
Yeah, in a game, you'll hear a lot of coaches yell things like, shoot, right? Move it, which is every now and then it's fine if you're loud enough and appropriate. But they're coaching the guys on the ice. When they see how I said guys get that deep? See how that was a good play? I'm saying that to the guys on the bench. You want to let the guys on the ice play. And it's just the bottom line. Because the guys on the ice don't hear you. but you don't know what's going through their head. So just let them play and make corrections on the bench or teach them on the bench. There's no point in yelling and screaming. But that's what I think a lot of people do. They get caught up in the game. So that's the difference of being a coach and almost like a fan. So a lot of times, like, there's no difference than a lot of guys that coach coach that their parents, a parent coach, God, I can't put a sentence together today. A parent coach, that's what I say a lot of times. They're just, now they have a license to yell at the ref the same way they did when they were in the stands or yell at players, right? So that's not what coaching is, right? It's you want to be teaching the kids, showing them good and bad on the ice. If it's motivation, that's a thing you could use too. But it's on the bench. It's not the guys on the ice. They don't hear you.
Right. So if we move from there, first, that's just a good philosophy, I think, for the coach in general, is you're coaching the guys on the bench, not the guys on the ice. Because, man, so many times you watch a game, like especially youth hockey, like obviously in higher levels this doesn't really happen, but youth hockey, you got the dad guy on the door, like leaning over the bench, yelling on the ice, like, and you got the other 13 kids on the bench right here, like you've paid no attention to these guys at all, and you're yelling at the kid that's
well, you hear coaches like, okay, move it up, pass it, shoot, what are you doing? We mentioned a kid stopped and said, like he's not listening. He can't hear you, right?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, but it's one of those things that seems obvious, but maybe like you've never articulated it to yourself like that as a coach. And it's just a really good thing. I remember the first time you said it, it was like, yeah, it's a good way of putting it. So if we go between periods now, like talking about making adjustments, refocusing the team depending on what's going on. So what was your coaching strategies for that part of the game, like between periods, kind of talk, that kind of thing?
First time I coached, the first, you only got a couple of minutes, right? And because I wasn't a coach, like first time I ever coached, first couple games, you know, you got that 2 minutes in between, and I'd be like, okay, guys, just keep working hard, like keep going. It's like, that's no information.
Yeah.
It's no information.
Yeah.
The guys look at you like, yeah, okay, coach, like whatever. So I was like, yeah, that's kind of not helping. So I'd always try to find one or two things to fix and one or two things that they did well. So I always like to start positive, like it's a sandwich again. Try to go positive, negative, positive if I can. So it'd be like great work ethic, for example. Great work ethic. The forecheck is exactly how we practice. Way to go, guys. One thing we could fix on that, instead of just saying you suck, one thing we could fix on that is, you know, the second guy in is not going quite as hard as we should be. So let's work on getting the second guy in there and, you know, not what I'm making a thing up here, right? And then, anyway, our D zone is awesome. Just keep going like that. So it's something. But if there's some actual problem, it'd be a positive. It's like, okay, let's fix this. We're doing this, this, and this. Let's make sure that this is happening, because if we whatever.
Yeah. Like you're talking like a system level adjustment kind of thing. Yeah.
So that's the adjustments I would like to make, is work ethic or whatever. That's always a thing. And then systematically, what could we do differently, or how could we execute a little bit better, or where we might. In some games, you might say, you keep doing exactly what you're doing. I have nothing to say. You guys are doing great.
So then, yeah, that's what I was going to go next. Like, so what do you do about the, or how do you feel about the pick me up speech versus the, you know, ream us out kind of speech, or like, so what's the place for that? Like if the guys are just having a stinker game, or they're like way up, you have nothing to say, you just say nothing or whatever. But how do you feel about those kind of situations where you come in and like give them the big motivational speech versus the ream them out speech or those kind of things?
I think the ream them out or the furry eyeball is good if they deserve it. Like, and to me, it's one would be the feet aren't moving, they're just not working as a unit. That's something that's it has to be addressed every single time. Like, look them in the eye, you guys aren't working. Like, that's just the bottom line. You're not winning, or you're not in this game because you're just not putting in the effort. And we all know that we don't win without effort, or you know what I mean? Like, you have to have effort to be successful, period. And that's one thing that I'm not a big fan of. Like, it's not going to sit well with me. If it's execution, it's like you could, basically, I used to say to people, there's only a couple reasons why you don't execute something. Is one, you might not understand it, right? So if you don't understand it, we can address that. Number two, you don't want to learn it, right? So then that's a problem, or you just refuse to do it, I mean, right? That's a problem. And the other one is just not very smart. And that's something I can't fix, right? So if it's a system thing that they can fix, it's like you have those expectations, right? When they're seven, it's different. But as you get up, those expectations, the hard work has to happen. And number two, the execution, the basic things, like if you can correct it, do it. If they're having success and everything's good, you guys are doing perfect today. Just keep on it. Don't do one thing different.
So here's a interesting question, especially in like the AAA loops. Yeah. A lot of times you kind of know whether you're going to win or lose the game before you get there.
Sometimes, yeah.
So unless you're the mid-pack
teams. If you have
teams,
a chance.
Yeah, right? So How did you approach, I mean, you only ever really coached, like the two teams you coached, the youth hockey teams that you coached at least, or the one was, or the, for the couple of years was awesome. So you didn't really have this issue, but, I remember playing, our team was trash until we were like 14 or we weren't even competitive until we were like 14 or 15. And there'd be some games. Like I remember this one game in particular, we went and played Honey Baked for preseason.
Yeah. No chance.
And yeah. We lost like 11-2 or something like that. And I remember the coach coming in and reaming us about it. And I'm like, I vividly remember thinking this when I was like 12. I'm like, they're just better.
Was
I'm
Patrick like, Kane on that team, yeah, by the way?
Yeah. Like
no,
like,
it because he played in Honey Baked.
He was older.
Year before.
Yeah. He's older than me. But he, I remember like our coach coming in and reaming us. And I'm just like, they're better. I'm like, I don't know what you wanted us to do. Like if we did everything perfectly, we still would have lost 9-1 instead of 11-1 or whatever it was, you know? So I think that dynamic exists in a lot of those AAA loops where it's like, you know, you're going to get smacked for at least some percentage of the games or you're going to lose. So what was your strategy? If you can put yourself in that position, because I don't know if you ever were coaching, but
mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure. I was even with my greatest team ever.
Okay, perfect. So then, So what was your thought going into that on either end, like whether you're the shitty team or you're the good team where you know you're just going to smack
Let's
these
go
guys.
With the shitty team.
Yeah.
Okay. Or my good team. Let's just say it this way. That's on me as a coach. Those results are on me. I'm not saying that you should have beat Honeybake, but what you get out of that game is on me. Your job is not to beat Honeybake. Your job is to try to beat Honeybake, right? Your job is to compete your ass off. My job is to give you the tools as a bunch of players to compete, to make that 11. Because let's face it, you're 100% right. If you play the top team in the U.S. and you're ranked 47th in Ontario, the chance of you winning are, it's like when U.S. beat Russia in the 80 Olympics. It happens once. But they beat them, right? That was on the coach, a lot of it. Coach prepared his players. So when you're going into a game like that, and you're so let's say I was your coach, that my expectations wouldn't be to beat them. My expectations would be to try to beat them and compete. So if I have you guys try to skate with them, pass with them, and play like them, we already lost. It's not possible. I'm not even giving you a fair chance. So what my job is to do is to get you to play to frustrate the shit out of them, maybe to slow them down, maybe to give you a chance. So I'm going in there and saying, you know, it might be by period, right? Let's keep this, you know, this is the first period of the game. Let's start off a shift real good. Let's continue. You know, we got our X's and O's that we're going to do, right? So, like, in that situation, I can just tell you already, we're not forechecking two guys hard necessarily. We're going to make sure neutral zones are covered, and we're going to force everything to the outside, and we're going to dump pucks in, and, you know, it's going to be the ugliest, and we're going to play the hardest D zone. And if you do that really well, maybe the end of
chance, maybe.
Well, maybe that period ends up 0-0. Maybe it's 1-0 or 2-0, not 5 or 6.
So do you address
now? Now you're a fight, and you can address that now. You say, you guys are doing a great job. You keep wearing them out. We, you know, you don't say that we have a chance to beat them finally, but you say we're right in this game. We have a chance here. Let's go. And you feed off that positive.
So do you address the reality that you're probably gonna lose? You don't want to go in and say, hey guys, I know we're probably gonna lose, but let's try really hard.
No.
So what is the attitude when you know that your players basically know we're going to lose this game?
Well, you change that for them.
Yeah.
You change that for them. I mean, like Herb Brooks, I hate using this. I don't even like the movie.
Yeah.
But I like it. There's like he said, right? He goes, I don't think he said it, but it was like, if we play them
10 times, they might win
100 times. Yeah. They might win 99, but not tonight. Right? You tell them this is a talented team. Like, and this is the thing, right? You're preparing them. We're playing the best team in the United States of America or the best team in Ontario. You know they're ultra talented. So if we try to match that skill, we're already done. So our philosophy is we're going to slow them down. We're going to make it miserable for them. Blah, 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 blah. And you put a belief. That's your job today. So if you go out after a period and you haven't got scored on and you got two shots on net maybe, you're feeling pretty good. You have a chance. And that's just the bottom line. That's what you do. And I did that with my best team in the world. we would play good teams, or I would do the opposite. Okay, we're playing whatever. They're ranked 327th in the freaking city. But you can never underestimate your opponent. You have to play your style of game. We're fast. We're this. We're that. We move the puck. We work hard. We're going to outwork them. We're going to outskill them. Blah, 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 blah. And then it was like, oh, yeah, we got to do that kind of stuff. So it's like you're the coach. You prepare your team. If not, you're not the coach.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. You're not the coach. If you can't do that part, you're not the coach.
Yep.
Right? Does that make sense?
No, that's good. That's exactly what I wanted you to say. You did a great job.
Okay.
What a great answer.
Ah!
Seriously. No, it's important because you can – that is the reality for a lot of in a lot of AAA loops. Like, that is what happens. Like, you play the mid-pack teams and you know you have a chance. Maybe you'll get a win. But if you're going to a tournament, like, a lot of times you know whether you're winning and losing this game when you get there. You look at the four games you have and it's like, oh, yeah, like, Marlies, we're going to lose. Honeybake, we're going to lose. We might be okay against the Quinty team. We might be okay against the Barry team or whatever it is. You know, the kids already know. They see who they're playing and they think. So as a coach, it's important that you're the leader. Like, you need to, without bullshitting, without pretending.
But there's your identity right from the start. It's like, you know, you're just a bunch of rubber boots, right? So you don't pretend that you're something else. You create that identity. You're like, you joke about it and you make it like, take pride in it, right? We're hey guys, like, we're the Essex County guys, right? Like, that's where we live. It's like, everyone's a farmer or auto worker, more or less. It's like, we make fun of it, right? We're not a bunch of accountants and lawyers and stuff like that. We're hardworking dudes, and it's like your pride. So you go out there and you play that way. It's not making fun of those other people. Those other people look at you like a bunch of guys with rubber boots, man.
Yeah.
you know, it's the same thing, but you create that identity. Then you go out there and you play to that identity. You take pride in it. And there is pride in it. There is pride in it, in being less talented and harder working or frustrating or playing against a top team. And they hate you because, like, we should be slapping these guys around and they're frustrated. That's what you wanted to do. And you can beat them. And I'll give you a story. I'm not going to give this guy's name out because he pissed me off. He played in the NHL. And first time we played them, when I was coaching Beltire, we were playing in a Toronto tournament. So the rules were a little bit different. And I'm Canadian, by the way. You know, I was coaching an American team, so he must have thought I was a Yankee or an American, right? So and a lot of the kids used to chirp and call the kids Americans and all that stuff, right? So, and I was like, I'm not, I was like taking offense. Yeah. But anyways, we're coaching this game in Toronto and we were shorthanded 5-on-3. Like, the hitting to the head rule was like, I'm like, what is this rule? Yeah. One of our best players fell. No, some guy fell. One of our best players skated. His head hit his knee and we got another penalty. I'm like, so starting off, we're 5-on-3 shorthanded for the almost 2.5 periods. Like, I'm not shitting you. We're up 3-1. So then this guy got a penalty and it was a 5-minute. And so the benches in the Westwood Arena or Chesswood. Yeah, Chesswood. Like, the glass was like head level. This guy's about 6'4". So I'm like, what is that penalty for? Like, I asked the ref, what is that penalty for? Like, it's not a, it was a hit to the head. So this guy reaches over and goes, what do you think he was going to call? He was being a jackass about it. So I look at him like, shut up. Whatever, right? So anyways, we ended up beating them like 5 or 6-1. Once we got even strength, it was bang, 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 bang. And they were a big Toronto team. So, okay. We played them in another tournament. It was a couple months later. And this guy used to go to our games because they knew we were playing us a couple of times. Played them like 3-4 times that year. And then he'd be at every one of our games. NHL guy. So he was starting to write shit down. Next game was like, we still beat them pretty good. The next game was a little tighter. The last game we played them was a 4-4 game. Coaching. This wasn't he coached me.
Yeah. That would never happen.
It couldn't happen. No. No, but he made adjustments and he probably said the same thing. He goes, we're not losing to these guys again. You know what I mean? He put his NHL face on, told them how they're going to do it. And if you don't do it, he probably said, I'll kill you. I'll, like, actually kill you with my bare hands. Right? And they did it. And they probably felt really good about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't go into a game ever thinking that you're just going to lose or you're just going to win. And I say this in that aspect, but I say it as an individual too. We say it all the time. Mark Messier just said that in the book I was reading too. Don't ever, ever, ever underestimate your opponent, ever. So you can do that in mixed martial arts, right? Jake Paul got into boxing, mixed martial artists, and everybody said, he can't win. Like, come on. everyone underestimated him because he's just a YouTube guy. He's winning some of these fights, right? Because probably those guys are in there. Yeah, I'll go kick the shit out of them. So it's the same thing. And when you're playing hockey, even though you think you're good, do not ever, when you think you're going to the next level, think or underestimate how good that league is going to be. I don't care if you're moving up one, like from minor midget to major midget, junior C to B to A to American League to NHL. The jump is going to be the jump. And if you think it's going to be easy, it will not be easy. And then don't overestimate how good you are. So don't underestimate your opponent or the level you're going to, and don't overestimate how good you are. Because when you do that, that's the recipe for failure. So long sentence here, but when you're coaching a team, you have to instill that belief in people. And the beautiful thing about this, and this is how coaching and hockey translate into life, when you do that through the sport, and your everyday work ethic, and you slay the giant, or you're the giant and you refuse to get slayed, that translates into your life, right? Problems aren't necessarily problems. They're solvable problems because I can work hard. I can get through this. I've seen this before. I've just seen it in a hockey game. But if I can do it in hockey, I can do it in my math class. If I can do it in hockey, I can do it in my business. If I do it in hockey, I can fix my marriage, right? You learn how to be a warrior. And I use that term loosely, but it's the truth. Learn how to be a warrior, right? That's what sports is. It's about overcoming. It's about David beating Goliath. Is that how it goes? Yeah, David beating Goliath. It is that. It is that. Why are the best champions? Like, I was looking at something with Conor McGregor the other day. He was talking about, I didn't even look at the whole thing, but just talking about, you know, when you make a promise to yourself to go to bed at, let's say it's 10 o'clock at night, don't break that promise. Get to bed. Do the things every day to make yourself a winner. And when you decide to do that as a coach and the player and all that stuff, that's how you actually win. And that's the thing. Like, so let's just take that from a kid trying to play, like play in the NHL or get drafted or get a scholarship, right? Why do these kids move to bigger cities, to better teams? Because they think the grass is greener. But do you not think that the scouts, I mean, we've seen this a million times, do you not think that the scout, let's say that team that I was talking about, that we beat 7-1 and then 6-2 and then 4-3 and then tied them. Scouts didn't say, God, you know, these guys are, they lost to them earlier, but they keep fighting. Now they're beating these guys. I like that kid. He blocked those shots, right? Whereas my guys were doing this and now all of a sudden they couldn't skate through guys because this guy was kept hammering this guy and frustrated him. Oh, scouts see that. So you that's that warrior mentality. That's that winning mentality, is that I'm going to win. I'm going to be as good as you. I'm going to do something to negate your success or your talent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, very well said. That was good. I want to end on one last point. Maybe this will get you to go on another rant. Maybe it won't. My last thing before we shut her down, I want you to talk a little bit about like knowing yourself as a coach, being yourself as a coach, whether that's practice, game, your communication style, whatever, and kind of the importance of that, because there's a lot of guys try to turn into something that they're not,
yeah,
when they're coaching, yeah, and your players can see through it. So maybe, yeah, talk a little bit about that to finish up.
It's huge. You can only be who you are. You know, like people watch movies and movies aren't real life, right? If you look through life, the successful people or people that just, you don't have to be ultra successful, but to be comfortable in your own skin, so you have to be in your own skin. And if you're a quiet guy, or let's put it this way, it's kind of an easy example for me, because I do have that side that I could motivate people. I don't mean to. It's just when I speak, that's me. Like what I just did, what I talked, that's just me. That's how I see life. That's how I see things. So when I, you know, I talked to kids the other day about that. We're actually in here, right? That we're talking about. It's not too late, as you've got time. And I was explaining why, but in my heart, that's how it comes out. So if I try to do it another way, maybe all serious, or I don't know what I mean by that. But if I do it that the way that it's not me, it doesn't come out the same way. It's not authentic. So if I'm trying to, because coaching to me is making people better. Is because I don't know who's going to make the NHL. That's what I told the kids. No one knows. You people think they know, but no one knows who's actually going to make it and have a career, right? So when I speak to kids and I say, like, if you stick to it and you do the things and you believe in yourself, da 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 da, you're the one that decides your career. And that's the truth. And I believe that from the bottom of my heart. So when I say that, they believe it because they feel it. If I'm not that guy, if someone or if someone hangs around with me and they try to be me, it doesn't work. It's not you. You have to do it. You have to do it your way. And it might not be that part that, you know, you bring the best out of someone in that way, but you will bring your thing to people. So I might be the guy, like for you, Eric, as a player, I might be able to get you to so fired up to play. And I don't mean to be a motivator. That's not the point, but that's just the way I am. So I can take you on the ice or in practice and workouts, and I can make you want to do the job. Okay. Now, I can't be DJ Smith, who coaches in Ottawa. He's a friend of mine who's really, really good at X's and O's. So if I try to X and O you to death, I'm not a good coach anymore, right? So that's where I would like someone else that maybe is better at X's. I'm okay at it, but I'm not the best at it, right? So I try to stay in my lane the best I can. But what I offer people is I'll put it up with anybody. It's awesome. But if I try to be someone else, I can always try to learn. And if I can add that to what I'm really good at, that's good. But if I try to do something else and I avoid, you know, if I just try to be an X and O's guy, it's no good. Then I'm just a coach in my eyes. And I think kids, the people that I teach and work with would say the same thing. It's, oh, yeah, he's changed. Like, it's not the same. You know, the people for know sure. who you are, right?
You can sniff it out.
Yeah, because people, yeah, you just know the bullshit, right? People know bullshit. It's like the guy that, you know, I had a coach in junior and I was 16 years old. And he came in the room after our first game, first period of or early in the season, and he was a drunk. We knew it. I was 16. I knew it. I was bouncing off the walls half the time. Didn't have a good work ethic. He was on the phone all the time, feet up, couldn't say hi to us. They came in the room and started yelling at us. They looked directly at me about being out all night drinking and screwing and all this stuff. And I'm like, me? I'm 16. But what are you doing? Like, you lost me, man. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can read your bullshit because you're the one that was doing it last night, not me.
Yeah.
Kids know.
Yeah. People know. That's the biggest issue, man. People know.
People know who you are, right? So be yourself and yourself, whatever your version of yourself is, it's going to be good. Just be yourself, right?
Yeah.
By being honest, dude.
No. I think that's huge, man, because people can sniff out the authenticity. They can feel when you're playing the bullshit game or trying to be something you're not, or they can see you don't do what you're saying. And it's very readable.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking that all my years growing up, no matter what, even if I couldn't say it in these words to myself, I remember looking at some of my coaches like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Kidding me?
Well, you got a guy that's coaching, right? And all of a sudden he decides, okay, what I saw in the movies or what I see is, on the highlights, I see a coach snapping and kicking a garbage can, red face, you know, furnace face, and just losing his mind. But that guy played that way. Or he's got 39 stitches over his left eye and 6 broken noses. He's done that. He's been punched in the face. And so if you do that and you're not making fun of accountants, I'm just using that for an example. You're an accountant. You've never been punched in the face. And you're just, you know, you don't lift weights or whatever. And you it's go in you, there, man. You start kicking a garbage can and stop, and the kids are going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I'll beat you up. I'm 7.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not scaring me. You just look stupid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Well, I think that's a good message to leave off on for this episode, at least for the coaches, to just be yourself as the coach and play that into however your practice or game style coaching is going to be. Just make sure you're being yourself, because that authentic part is, I think that's a real underestimated characteristic to have as a coach, because especially for the players, because the players will read it right away. Well, man,
I was just thinking of one more thing as you're saying that. It's very important, and the thing is being authentic sometimes makes you vulnerable, right? So yeah, there's been many times where, because it's my natural thing, is if I'm talking to someone, it's like if I actually get like if I'm talking to someone and if I believe in you and I'm talking to get that out of you, I'll tear up. And I get the, like, I can't help it. I just, like,
I've seen that,
it's a weakness I have. Seriously, because I get emotional. So I'll tear up, or I'll be like, like it looks like I'm going to cry. It's just the truth. So I having done that, and I've done that, I've cried in front of people, like, cause I get emotional. It's like, that's vulnerability. They could say the guy cried, but it is who I am, man. It is what it is. So if I'm going to not be myself so that I don't put myself in that vulnerable situation, I lose. Yep. And you lose, right?
Yep. Well, we'll leave it on that one. We got one more episode. Guys that want to get their questions in, any of the members, please do that. We'll have one more episode and then a Q&A episode. So we'll see you guys next week for the last one.